Hey there, welcome today to the Spiritual Warfare Unit podcast. We've flipped the tables today and we have Isaac, normally the host of Spiritual Warfare Unit, as our guest today. So welcome as the guest, Isaac.
Morning, Aaron. How are we doing?
Hey, not too bad, thanks. And so Isaac has his Spiritual Warfare Unit podcast, doing great things, and his audience, his followers are saying, hey, what's your story? What are you doing? So that's what we're about to do today is discover some of Isaac's background, right? So if you haven't liked, shared, followed Spiritual Warfare Unit, please do so. Get out there, check that out. He's doing a lot of great podcasts, a lot of great work there. So we appreciate that work here from the UKN studios. So, all right, Isaac, so how's things going in your world?
Hey, how are ya?
How are ya?
So things are going pretty excellent, to be honest. Thank you for asking.
Awesome. Awesome. So, you know, things change, right? We're just having this conversation before this started up about how life changes pretty fast. 3 months, 6 months, 9 months, a year, right? So we go back to January-ish, right? And it kind of switched gears and life was changed. So we're going to lead up to that.
Yep.
We're going to get to there. First things first, give us some background on you. People want to know, Isaac, where are you from? What do you do? Because that's what you ask.
So, yeah, right.
So give us some background there.
It's a good question, so, because where you come from kind of dictates who you are, right?
So, absolutely.
I grew up in Flint, Stewart and DuPont, for those that know the area.
Right. That kind of comes with some type of sign, right?
Well, as long as you stay above the 80% murder rate in that area. Right. So, yeah, that was the north side.
Okay.
And I was there till I was seven. And then my parents got divorced. My dad worked at the shop. My mom stayed at home. And stayed with my mom for 4 years. And we kind of moved around. And she struggled with addiction. And so we were constantly moving, right, every school semester. And so we did that for 4 years. And then,
so let's talk about that for a second.
Yeah.
So as a young person, we always say, man, as soon as they can get their schedules and be able to have a program and a regimen and they thrive in that environment.
Yeah.
Here you are being plucked and pulled and new circumstances, new circle of friends, new influences, just in and out makes growing up kind of hectic.
Well, you're always the outsider. Like you're always the new guy. And so you got to kind of, you just adapt, and you don't really vest in people because you know you're going to be leaving soon, so there's not really a point. So you just kind of, you live on the outskirts of things, and you know, it was a very violent part of my life growing up. My mom really struggled with her temper and stuff, and so that ultimately turned out to be a positive, though, because given a couple of really dark situations that happened on my mom signed over custody to my dad when I was 11, so I was able to go stay with him, which was a much better environment.
You know? Okay, so we have a little bit of chaos, a little bit of transition, regular transition.
Mm-hmm.
You do all that. So never easy as a child, right? But I always say how we grow up, you can use it to motivate you to do great things or to justify the bad things.
Yeah, absolutely. Right? It's a fire that doesn't go out that you can use for whatever choice you make, right?
For better or for worse.
Yeah, right.
All right. All right, so let's flip the switch here. Now we're headed to, let's just say, age 11.
Yeah.
Things worked out court-wise, custody-wise, et cetera, and you ended up with your dad.
My dad, my stepmom, yeah.
Okay, so where are you at with your dad?
Right, so we were in Davison, lived in, you know, little town, you know, had your friends you played baseball with and basketball, played sports, you know, nobody's perfect, but it was safe. You didn't run out of food. You know,
and simple things.
Yeah, you know, and when you've made a peanut butter and jelly on a hot dog bun, you know, as an 8-year-old, you're like, anytime you can get some extra, you know,
something with some meat.
Absolutely. So, you know, and you know, took me a long time. I'm no quitter, but definitely like my food.
Gotcha. So. Same here. I'm guilty, right? So, yeah. All right. So, 11 years old. Do you settle into then like a middle school program, junior high program?
Right. Good question. So, I went to a parochial school, Faith Baptist in Davison.
Oh, yes.
And settled in. I never really socially, like, I did sports. So, like, in our classes were like 20 kids, okay. You know, everybody knew everybody. But my dad was a blue collar, you know, shop kid, and there's the rich kids, and it just, you know, you don't fit in, which is fine. And then you do sports, but it was my own, like, growing up, going through the circumstances I did as a kid, like I told you, you sit on the fringe of society and you kind of watch because you don't get to vest in it because you're constantly moving. So I really struggled with that kind of stuff. And then, you know, getting out of finishing up in high school, I didn't really have any major big issues happen. You know, I didn't get in a lot of trouble. You know, I did sports, I stayed out of trouble, did soccer, you know, won the state championship, and I got to be the captain of the team, which was great.
Nice.
Yeah. And
sometimes it's the sports that create our identity, right? When you talk,
well, it gives us an access point to outlet all of that frustration, right? Like, for me, I would go to the gym just to get rid of the anger and frustration. And when I was out on the field, everything else go away. And just for a little while, you can just...
It's a sanctuary.
Right? Yeah, and those lines keep you from me, and I get to do something I enjoy to do, right?
Absolutely. Sports is a great identifier for people. I think sometimes we need to be careful that that's not our only identifier, but a lot of young men... build their reputation and their popularity and their life skills through athletic competition from the time they're young till they get older, right? A lot of parallels to life inside of a sports competition, right? No matter what it is.
Allegedly.
I'm going to agree with it. I grew up the same way in sports, and I know there's a lot of parallels, a lot of life lessons.
Yeah, you were right? Awesome. So, still are, even though you don't need it.
Don't tell me that. So, okay, so we get to high school. Make it through high school, and dreams, hopes, wishes, we're shooting for the stars, all of those type of things. So what did your dreams, hopes, and wishes amount to in reality upon departure of high school? Like, what did you choose to do?
Well, my dad said, you're too stupid for college, so you better go in the military. And he said, this trash bag is for your stuff. Get out. And I was like, oh, all right. And so... it was just his way. And in my dad's defense, he didn't have a dad. So, like, for him, he was like, you graduated, which he didn't do. He'd got a GED, GED.
My job's over.
Yeah, I did my job, get out. And from his perspective. And so I went right into the military, signed an eight-year bid for Seabees. And I did reserves for 8 years.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Awesome. So obviously we appreciate that service.
Thank you.
Yeah. Guys like you that fought for freedoms are important. You know, I often look back to high school when I graduated and military was not even a thought.
Wow.
And my friends that all went to military, I guess I was isolated in my own world. I didn't even realize, like, until later in life that these guys went to the Army, Navy, Air Force.
You would have fit in really good, man.
So most people that see me say, you're military or police, aren't you?
Yeah.
I say, nope and nope, right? But most people say that. So
no,
I think that's part of that. You know, athletes, sometimes if they don't go to college and play, they may go to the military because that athleticism, the endurance, the skill set kind of goes hand in hand with the military.
Well, and it gives you, like, a way to grow up in a controlled environment where you're not having to be in control of all of your responsibilities, like your housing's on base and your food, and so your basic necessities are taken care of, you know.
Almost simplifies life, so to speak. So here you go. Garbage bag in hand.
Headed
on your way.
Yeah.
So what branch of service?
I was a CB Navy and combat battalion. And so I went to Great Lakes, and then we did A training in Ventura, California, San Diego, and then came home and started doing the tours and stuff, and that's all I want to talk about that, if that's fine.
Yeah, that's cool.
And so we did that from, like, 94 to 03, But in the meantime, I was I played semi-pro soccer for a group called the Capital Kickers for 96 to 97. On our down team, we were able to win a championship in 97, I think, which was cool. And just not really knowing what I'm doing with my life. It's whatever. I go to college. My daughters are born, twin girls, which are amazing.
Awesome.
People. They're 24 now, and they both have their little lives. And, like, you sometimes, as a parent, you know, you're like, man, I don't deserve how great these kids are, you know, because you look at all your mistakes and screw ups, right? And you're like, dude, how did they still love me? Like, how did that happen?
Yeah,
you know. And then, you know, the grandkids come in and stuff, and it's
life changing.
Oh, dude, it's my most favorite part, man.
Yeah, crazy. I had young kids at a young age myself, right? Mm-hmm. And it totally changes perspective on me. What am I going to do? Where am I going to go? My dreams, my hopes, my wishes.
Yeah,
to
yours.
Okay, so now what do I got to do? Now I got responsibility. Yeah. Now I got somebody depending on me, right?
Yeah.
So that's part of growing up, I know, and that type of stuff. So, okay, so military, got out of the way, did some things, a little bit of semi-pro soccer, cool.
Yep.
And then eventually we kind of settled into, okay, found myself a situation in which I'm going to embark on. So a job or
So I was out of college. I got recruited by Big Boy, actually, to manage, which was great. And I love restaurant work. And so got in doing that, was managing, go through typical things, hire, raise. I get stepped out. I was managing for, I don't know, man, like 6 years.
Okay.
That's where I met my wife, and ended up stepping down from the position because of a disagreement with a regional manager, and got into working for a printing company, Twiddle Litho, and rode the cherry pickers. They were like 50-foot-high cherry pickers, right? You know, when you go up with it, which is, and it was fun. I mean, I liked the work. It was just boring, you know, and didn't really pick my brain, but it was good money. It was dating later to be my wife. Like, life's in a good spot. And I was 20, 23, 24, 25, right in there, doing that. And then I had an interesting thing happen. So, like, my boss I was working with, he was cheating on his wife with this girl at work, and he thought she liked me or something. He sits riding me, you know. And I'm like, and we had all hung out as a group. And so one day it got to this point where he had taken a 2-pound sledge, and I'm riding a cherry picker, right, in a plant, and he starts beating on the handle that you hold to go up to the second floor, and just cussing and screaming at me. And him and I didn't really get along. And so, like, it was to that point of disagreement. And so I had another supervisor come up to me and say, you know, you need to be careful. He told me he was going to lie about you on the paperwork to get you fired. And I was like, wow. And this is just the time that I started working on my anger, right? And it's just like, I'm going to kill this dude, right? And so I'm like, Lord, you know, don't give me patience. Don't give me strength. Because if you give me strength, I'm going to jail tonight, you know?
Right on.
And so working on it, he gets the paperwork. He gives me 3 days off unpaid, right? And come up with all this stuff that I did. And he said, if you, you're getting 3 days off unpaid because of blah, blah, blah paperwork. Well, that week we had a safety meeting or whatever. And the guy that was doing the safety training was like, I need people to draw. Are you interested in learning how to use a computer blank system, right? And I was like, sure. And he's like, well, you know, let me talk to my boss. We'll talk about hiring you, which was like a $12,000 raise, and you're traveling all over the country doing this. And so it went from being stuck in this position, and I was trying to work on my temper, which I wasn't doing very well. I was pretty high. Right.
That's how that goes.
Yeah. And then it came to me, right? And I'm like, all right. So I prayed about it and was like, yeah, sure. So I took the job, and like I said, it was a $12,000 instant raise, which back in the early 2000s, you know.
Good stuff. That's when God can take a situation that was bad and turn it into something good and fruitful.
Well, it was like my choice to go, am I going to trust you to get this done, or is this, I'm going to go punch this guy for being, and I had another supervisor saying, man, this guy's setting you up, and I don't like this guy, and all this stuff, right? And I'm like, what is happening, right?
Sounds like we maybe needed a referee, so we're going to catch up the rest of the story, the grand finale. Right. And we'll talk about that and then where life led you after that. So we're going to take a short break, let our sponsors do some checking in, and then we'll be right back.
Quick break from our podcast. I wanted to let you know about our life application program that we have for churches and nonprofits in the area that are trying to find programming that they can use in case the corona shuts you down and you're not able to get in. You go to spiritualwarfareunit.com. Click on our episodes, and you can check out our programs for as little as $29.99 a month to make sure that we're still getting the word out to those people that need it. Now, back to the program.
I really don't need you to do this.
Okay, Isaac, the host of the show, Spiritual Warfare Unit. If you haven't liked, followed, and shared that, I suggest you do. Isaac's got some great content on there, interviewing people with nonprofits and doing other great things in the community, and we appreciate that work.
Thanks, man.
And today we flipped the tables on Isaac and put him on the interviewer side, beside, you know, from the host seat. So we're catching up. We're at the climax of a story that was going to be life changing for you. The boss is saying, "Hey, we got to do this, got to do that," and let's pick up that story right there. We'll cap that and move on to where we were going from there.
Yeah. So like, I had to make the decision on whether or not I was going to lose my temper on, because back then I was just, you know, I didn't have a problem being more physical. So I prayed about it. I'm like, all right, I'm going to trust you, Lord, which wasn't easy, right? And this is like a 2-year culmination. So I took 3 days off, got the job, put in my 2 weeks. So he was all happy, right? So like, I'm like, all right, Lord, like, whatever. It is what it is. Thank you for helping me get out of the scenario. Go start the new job. Well, it just so happened, like 6 months after I started, I had to go back there to do a lockout tagout placard for one of their machines they had just bought, right? And so I go in there and I'm like, "Oh, hey, where's the old boss?" And I'm like, "Oh, you didn't hear?" I was like, "No." They're like, "Yeah, his wife found out he was cheating on him and left him, divorced him. The supervisor went and told the vice president that he put bad paperwork in on you and set you up, and he got fired. His kids left him, and his dad died all in 6 months." And I was like,
Wow.
I was like, I hope, like, I wasn't, like, like the benefit of that. But, like, people, but, like, you know, karma is like a biblical thing, right? Like, the acts of a man will return upon himself, right? So we're in there, and that all happened. And so, like, when someone's like, as a Christian, "Oh, I'm going to go take care of this," like, let's just pretend from my perspective that God was protecting me in that environment, and I was learning something. So I trusted him with my action. And then God said that the verse says he fires a coal on their head, right? If that's fires a coal, like, his whole life got crushed. I couldn't have hit him that hard or responded that hard. And it taught me this lesson that was like, man, like, if the Lord's going to take care of it, then I actually don't have to defend myself, right?
Absolutely.
And it became like this thing, this mantra that I started using. So that was kind of neat. And that was, you know, when that job I started working on was it was a lockout tagout company, and I started engineering, and you would fly to Connecticut or New York or California, Texas, all over, and you know the little "you are here" signs on the machines, and it shows you where the stuff is that nobody pays attention to right keep them safe, right? I made those, right? And we made them for, I mean, everybody, military companies and every car company you can think of. We did it in there. And so after a couple years doing this, I get, like, we would inevitably, stuff goes wrong, shipping goes wrong, things go wrong.
Right on.
And we had this incident in Alabama where this kid had been working there, and they called us and were really mad, and they said, "Isaac, can you go down there and figure it out," right? And it was like a $1.5 million contract or something. So I go down there, and I'm with this other team of guys, and I just went in the office. I'm like, "Hey, you know, what's the issue?" And they're screaming and yelling. Yeah, and I didn't do it, so it was, like, not personal.
Right.
And I'm like, "Well, what do you need done?" I made my list, and then I would do whatever, you know. And if they want you in at 5 a.m., fine. They want you in at, you know, you tell me every 4 hours where your people are and what you're doing, whatever. Didn't matter because they were already mad, right? And then you fix that problem, kept the contract. President brings me in. He's like, "How did you do that?" And I was like, "How did I do
do what?
You know? And right. he was like, how did you get them to not drop us? And I was like, well, I just asked him what he wanted, and then I did what he asked. And then that was it. And they're like, oh, we're having this other problem, right, out in California. And I'm like, this is right around 2008, right, where everything's getting ready to smash.
Flat.
Yeah. So I'm out in California, $3 million job, didn't get a stitch of work done for 6 weeks. Not a stitch of work, right? Get in there, get a meeting with 52 different managers, vice presidents, like, oh, I'll be on the phone with you. 10 minutes before the meeting, the vice president calls, yeah, I won't be able to make it. You let me know how it goes, right? And I'm like,
thank you.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I just feel like I got hung out to dry, right? Yeah. So I go in the bathroom, I'm shaking, and I'm like, all right, this is it, you know? So you go in there, guy comes in yelling, screaming, get it figured out, get paid for the whole contract, which is $3 million, right? President calls 10 minutes after meeting. How'd it go? I'm like, I got paid back pay. I got paid time. All of our stuff moving forward, blah, blah, blah. And I picked up a $3 million contract in Texas, right? He's like, oh, great. Thanks for letting me know. About 15 minutes later, the president's like, oh, the VP told me he just took care of that problem out there that they had, you know, and got us another contract. I was like, rah, you know. But I remember sitting down, but I had done it. You know, I had done it. And you know that hole you don't tell anybody about that, like, man, I should feel really good about myself? Like, it wasn't there. Like, I should have, I was, you know, gonna be 30 and just ran a $6 million setup. And I'm looking over the ocean and I'm like, man, this isn't it, man. Like, this is not.
Still searching, still feeling, still,
yeah, that
still
thing.
Wondering.
And yeah. So, like, and then 3 weeks later, the car accident.
Ooh,
right, nice. So I'm taking my daughters home. It's me, my wife, my twin girls, and I'm driving in a Hyundai Elantra. That matters. And a lady with an F-250 pulled out in front of us. And so I had like a split second decision, like a quarter of a second. But in my mind, that quarter of a second's like a minute, right?
Yeah, right.
And it's like, if the truck hits the side, my wife and daughter are going to be really injured or possibly dead. What do? You think of the safety measures of the, and I just turned into the truck, take it head on, right? So wife, kids end up being okay. I died on scene. There just happened to be an ambulance a mile and a half away. And they came revived, and I didn't like have a moment. I didn't see Jesus or angels or anything. Like, I was laying on the concrete, and the clouds turned like purple and yellow and green, and all of a sudden the concrete in the middle of July just stopped being hot, and I was very calm. And I remember the last thing I said was, I did okay, right? And then the next thing I hear is someone saying, his blood pressure 70 over, nothing, keep trying. So in my head, I'm like, pump, 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 pump,
please
pump,
do,
pump,
right,
pump, right?
I can do.
And then this rush of pain. And I'm like, oh, my God, I'm alive. Like, you know, because you knew right. The pain.
Celebrate the little things.
Listen,
right?
Well, you know, in heaven, there's no pain, right? So right. It's like, dude, you know you're living because the pain was just jolting through, right? So go to the hospital. I have to have reconstructive surgery on my foot. They missed two cracked ribs. They miss a couple other things. And it takes 15 months to find out. But, like, in the car accident, I got a brain injury, which affects my vision. Hence the cool hat and sunglasses I wear all the time, right?
I like it.
Right. So it took 15 months to find that. Now, in that 15 months, they had me seeing a psychologist who has said, oh, you're faking your injury. Right. So I'm...
I don't even know what injury you're talking about to be faking it, right? When it comes to the head and trauma.
Oh, right. So, and when you have a brain injury, first of all, you have to come to the conclusion that you're actually injured and the way you did things doesn't even work anymore. Like, it's this whole process. You actually have to go through the death process of yourself because that personality doesn't exist anymore, right? That's why when people are like, well, why is it so hard to do it? It's like... You died, but you're still here, and you still have to live, right? So, anyways, this guy's got me, and he's got me thinking I'm losing my mind, right? So it took 15 months. And the reason why it took 15 months is because the injury I had, it's not just a brain injury. It's not just a rare brain injury. It's the rarest brain injury they've ever found in the history of brain injury, and its name's called horror fusion. What a terrible name, right?
Yeah, that goes right along with the pain, I suppose.
Yeah, like when horror's part of the definition
of what you got,
yeah,
you're in trouble.
And it was like, And so what happens is the eyes work independently of each other. So it creates nausea and vomiting and vertigo and migraines. They're just not cool.
So when people look at you and say, wow, that guy there, Isaac, he looks at the world through rose-colored
glasses. Yeah.
It's not so easy.
First of all, you look great, I will say. But, like, yeah, it took 2.5 years. This is like 6/10, and I had to go through, like, a series of things. And so, you know, just finishing up with that doctor, I finally got the result of the injury, the horror fusion. And there was like 10 names. You can't even, more vowels than letters, you know. And so I had a case manager at the time. And she's like, you know, I'll give this to your psychologist. I was like, no, I'll do it. So I go in there, and he's just a little fella. And I just dropped the manila folder on his desk, and he's like, oh, I heard you got a result. I was like, yeah. And I sat there, and he opens it up, and he, oh, and ooh, and ah, and all that. And so I just wait for him to finish, and I'm mad. Like, I'm really mad.
Sir, according to this folder, you shouldn't even be here.
That's right.
Okay.
So he finishes up, and he goes, well, what do you think? And I said, well, I'm curious. I said, what psychosis does this brain injury fall under? He's like, well, it doesn't. And I was like, man, I guess that means you suck at your job, bro.
Since I'm not faking my injury.
Yeah, since I'm not faking this brain injury and had me go to the craziest end of depression of my life, right? And I said, you know what you do with people that suck at their jobs? He's like, what's that? I was like, you fire them. He's like, you can't fire me. I'm like, of course I can. And I was like, well, my insurance is paying you, right? He's like, you can't fire me. I was like, watch this. So I grabbed my phone. I called my case manager. And I was like, hey, you know that jerk you had me seeing? And I'm looking right at him. I was like, you know that jerk that you had me seeing that I almost committed suicide with? She's like, yeah. I was like, I don't want to see him no more. He sucks. She's like, okay, I'll take care of it. Just hung up. And I said, since you're going to charge my insurance the other 45 minutes at $225, I was like, we're just going to sit here. And for 45 minutes, I just looked at him. Didn't say a word. Just looked at him. It was the most awkward. Through. And it was, you know, people are like, Isaac, that's rude. And I'm like, yeah, probably. But from a brain injured standpoint, it made sense.
Right.
You know,
right.
So.
And the effects of that brain injury, right? We can talk about it in light and all of these things. But
yeah.
Boy, what stifling limitations sometimes it gives you. Things that are out of your control that do affect you, that you have to go seek shelter. Just so many nuances to a brain injury that if you're not familiar with, that you don't understand. So it takes some getting through. So here's what we're going to do. We're going to take another break.
All right.
Right. Let our sponsors get another word in. So in the break time for our viewers, like, follow, and share Spiritual Warfare Unit. And make sure that you look at some of his other podcasts that are out there. We have flipped the script on Isaac because the people, his audience out there are saying, Isaac, what about you? You're getting all this information about everybody else. What about you? So we were catching up here. Yeah. Let's talk a little bit about this brain injury. I know me and you kind of chuckle about it because it's rare. You've outlived it and all of these things.
Yeah.
But it got pretty serious there, obviously, in a lot of things. So let's start with you finally got a diagnosis, right?
So yeah.
You got a diagnosis.
Yeah.
Then they're going to give you this and then say, here's what you can possibly do.
Yeah. So the diagnosis is called horror fusion, which.
Are you saying horror?
Like horror movie.
H-O-R-R-O-R.
Yeah.
O-R.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. That's a bad situation.
Yeah.
When that's your saving grace.
That's what the defining word. It starts with horror. It's like, oh, there's some good news.
Yeah.
So yeah, it's called horror fusion. So both your eyes work, but they don't work together. They work independently. So imagine,
like a chameleon.
Yeah. But the information is coming in the same time, but it's not coming in the same way. So your brain is just freaking out. Right. And then overstimulation with sound, light.
Noise.
So I had to do, they said, well, we can do a realignment surgery, eye realignment surgery. And I'm like, what's that? And they said, that's where we cut into your eye, realign your eye, and we hope to get it to the spot that your brain takes it so your eyes will work together. I'm like, what's the percentage chance of success? And he said, 0.5. And I was like, oh, 99.5% chance it'll work. He's like, no, 0.5% chance that'll work. 0.5%. And I'm like, let's do it. So I get
you were saying, do you got anything like with 1%?
No, this is the shot.
This is what you
the
got.
Shot is 0.5%. So here's what the surgery is. They strap you down on one of those chrome things with the light leather from head to
gurney.
Yeah, from head to toe. Like I was Hannibal Lecter.
Right on.
And then they wheel you into the surgery room, and they put you in what's called a night sleep. So you're knocked out, but you're still not knocked out, right? And they take this wire, they cut in through the white part of your eye, wake you up, adjust it, knock you back out, and finish up.
That's right? Cool.
That's not cool, bro. Oh,
it's not cool.
It's not cool.
Sounds cool?
Yeah. Yeah. Doesn't sound cool either.
Okay. Sounds pain-free.
It's not.
Okay. I'm like, over three there.
That's what my doctor said. Well, there's no pain receptors in your eyeball. I'm like, yeah, it's weird, but where you cut in the muscle, so it only hurts when I move it. Oh.
Yeah.
And you know that involuntary eye movement?
Right.
Yeah, that's a thing.
Rapid eye movement.
Yeah. That's cool. So it's like, yeah, don't move your eye. Ow, 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 ow. Right? It's so... Finish up, so the whole white part of your eye is bloodshot red, right? Get done. Didn't work. Schedule another one. Didn't work. Schedule another one. Didn't work. And I have the number one surgeon in the United States, and it's such a rare injury. He did my surgery because if he fixed it, he's like, I'm doing this, so if it works, I get published. And that's what he told me. And I'm like, whatever. Let's just get it done. Fourth surgery doesn't work. He walks in. Now, mind you, I'm 33. He walks in my office, Kellogg Eye Center, sits down. He's like, I'm sorry, Mr. Walsh, it didn't work. Your life is over. And he turned around and shut the door. Just boom. His assistant's crying over there. I had to console her on my bad news. And at that moment, I was like, what does that mean? He's like, well, no one's lived past 20 years with this injury. You won't work. You won't drive. You won't be social. You won't be able to go out in public. You won't be able to... go out and do things. Yeah,
point.
Nothing. And I'm like, oh, that's not true. And I'm wrong. It was true. I was on a bunch of medications, one that made me allergic to the sun, but I had to have it. So I'd go outside and my skin would turn purple like within 20 minutes. The migraines were so intense, I couldn't leave the house for 7 years. So I'm in my house.
7 years.
I'm in my house, surgeries, therapy, rehab. You know, got very good at video games because there was nothing else to do, right? And I just got to this point where I was like, I was just suicidal. And so I got to this position where I was like, you know, this is bull crap. I don't deserve this. I'm always in pain. I'm throwing up every day because I'm motion sick. And I was like, Lord, this is it, man. Like, I planned out what I was going to do. And I'm sitting on my steps, and I'm people who know me, you know, I'm a go person, right? I either do it or don't do it. You don't have to question.
Right. Yep.
And I'm like, this is it, Lord. Like, this is it. And I'm sitting on the steps, and I go to stand up, and I'm like, if you're real, this is the time. And this little voice was like, all things work together for good. And I put my pointed my finger to the ceiling, and I was like, you prove it. And then the next thing I heard was, what do you want? And I was like, I want wisdom, right? Being brain injured and people just assume you're ignorant. And I was like, I want wisdom. And he was like, all right, you give me a shot then. And I was like, fine. I was 100% shot. And I started working on this program, right? And what I didn't know how to communicate with people. I went 3 years with saying everything that I thought. Imagine how many people want to be around you when, you know, hey, does this make me look fat?
Blame it on the brain injury.
Yes, it does.
I actually have a couple friends that act that way anyway.
They don't have an injury.
And they just say, blame it on the brain injury.
Yeah.
Not my brain injury, the brain injury.
Yeah.
So they kind of, but it's funny, but not funny.
Yeah.
Right?
No, it's
so
horrible because the judgment that you get from people, and then, you know, you don't have a scar. So, you know, even having, you know, a handicap thing and you're going in and you're not feeling good. It took me 3 years to get my license back, right? So I use the Bible as a what to do book of how to be able to communicate, and my whole personality was gone. So I had to look at it, which was a blessing and a curse, right? Because it was like I had bad habits prior to the car accident. Like I said, I had a temper, and I, you know, I was a yeller, and all. But it allowed me to look at it and go, why do I do that? I don't like yelling, and I don't like being yelled at. Why do I do both of those things? And so I just started taking inventory of what I do correctly and incorrectly, and then I found through my studies in Proverbs how to handle these things, and I was like, you might as well try it, right? So having a temper, first one was a soft answer turns away wrath, right? That's a verse. And I'm like, so if I, in real life, talk softly while someone's yelling, then they'll calm down. That's basically what that means. So I was in an argument with a family member, and they're screaming at me, and that clicked in my brain, and I was like, oh, let's try it, right? And so I looked at the person. I said, listen, I can hear you. Just like that. And the person across me was like, I know. And they calmed down, and I went, oh, my God, it worked.
Can you believe it?
What, I couldn't believe
it. The Bible says it's working.
And it wasn't like knowing the verse. It was trying it. And I was like a softy. So if I speak softly, then that person's going to calm down. I'm like, man, that was cool. What else can I do? And it just came out with this whole list of stuff.
Awesome. And that's a major life lesson, right?
Yeah.
Knowing things, reading things is one thing. Even believing in something is a thing.
Yeah.
Implementing it into life and trying to make it work for you is a whole other thing. And I think that's kind of some of the premise behind Spiritual Warfare Unit.
Yeah. Like
biblical life applications to you.
Yeah. So like doing it in real life works. And so then I was like, man, how much of this stuff works? And if it's been working, why haven't I been doing it in a way? And I started identifying, man, like I struggled with lying and with anger and with hatred and communication and jealousy and envy. And I was like, dude, I suck at all this stuff. And I'm like, all right, how can I get better? And so once I identified that I did struggle with those things and then implemented the solution, said, well, let's just see if it works. Let's just see if this is true or not true. Let's find out. And then I did it and it worked. And then create an entire program because I want people to win. Like, we all got to live life anyways. And I'm like, dude, this stuff, like, I go into a conversation and coming from a position of I don't want to speak because only God knows what's coming out of my mouth to, hey, let me interview people is a huge, long process.
That's a 180, right?
And they said it was not going to be possible. They said you never drive, right? So I made this list of the doctor's impossibility list is what I called it. Never drive. Took me 3 years. I can only drive 30 minutes, but I can drive, right? I got my license back. They said, you never work. It took me 6 years, but I got a part-time gig, and I was making my dollars.
There you go.
Right? And then got to meet you, and UCAN, the United Community Addiction Network, and the people, and you asked me to be on the board, and that was awesome because the time that I do have, I have about 4 to 6 hours that I can go outside before I get sick and I get tired, right? I want to do every day, you know, the doctor said the likelihood of me dying in my sleep is super high, right? Which is a good way to go. If you got to go,
if you're choosing a way,
sleeping it off is the way.
I would say so.
Right. But the thing is like I got in this habit where it was like, Lord, thank you that I got today, just in case. And then when I wake up, I'm like, all right, I get another shot. And then tonight, but what it made me do is every day I do one thing I have to do and one thing I want to do every day, no matter what. And I got into that habit of doing it just in case, so I didn't waste the day, right?
Yeah. It's called intentional living, right?
Yeah.
Really, really good. One thing that kind of strikes me through this whole thing is that you keep referencing your faith.
Yeah.
Sometimes when bad things, traumatic things, things negative happen to people, it doesn't really help them to rely on their faith.
Yeah.
It makes them question their faith.
Well, what it did for me, it was like, you know, God says, you know, test me to see that my word is good, right? Trust in the Lord with all your heart. Well, I don't trust anybody with all my heart, right? And that would be stupid given life's experience and people ripping you off and screwing you off. We've been through it. But it was like, well, what happens if I do it and then it doesn't work? Then I can say, well, Lord, it didn't work, so this is junk. Right? So I was like, let's just find out so I can get this out of my life or it's the answer. It's one or the other. And the thing that's always made it interesting about the Bible is like, you know, they say, oh, men wrote it and it was inspired by God. Which one of those are true? But if you look at the context, it's always telling us to do the opposite of what comes natural. It's easier to lie than tell the truth, right? It's easier to steal something than work for it. And it's telling us to do these things. So how could men have knowledge that they didn't have to apply it unless God was working through them? Right?
Absolutely.
And then if the Bible isn't accurate and doesn't have power, then why do you attack it? Because you only attack something that's a threat.
Absolutely.
And that information got into my mind. And once it started working, I was like, this helped me come through an injury that no doctor said I could do. And if I only have 20 years, you know, I don't know that. But I know no one's lived more than that. And we're at year 13. So I don't have the time to sit. Like, I would, if you disagree with me and you don't like me, I accept that. That's one of the answers. But I don't have to get upset with that. And if I only have 7 years left, every day has to be something. And I know I'll drive you nuts. I'll drive, because I'm like, what are we doing now? And well, it's only been 6 months. I just got to be like, yeah, well, you know, time keeps a ticking, you know. And then for my part, I got this D-size battery that is just there because when I died, I said I did okay. I don't want okay. That's not what I'm looking for.
Right.
You know, and if heaven and hell exists and our lives are here and each one of us has purpose and all of us have a reason for being here and our choices matter, if that's really what it is and we were born on a battlefield, I have no intention of going back going, yeah, I did okay. No way. I'm either going all in or I'm not going, and I'm an all-in guy.
Right.
You know?
With an injury that people are telling you, medical professionals are telling you, you're limited.
Yeah.
Your reach, your capacity, your ability to work, your ability to kind of live, quote unquote, a normal life has all been, emancipated, if you will. It's gone. And then you've been able to, through faith, through intentionality, through drive, commitment, it all inspires you to continue to live on, especially you dive into that Bible, and the Bible and what it's saying is starting to become a not only a truth, but a reality to you as you implement
life-changing. Yeah. So, like, remember I said, the voice said all things work together for good, and when I was sitting on the steps?
Right on.
It was like, okay, if that's legit, then the brain injury has purpose. So instead of looking at it as the problem, you look at it as the solution. Well, what did the brain injury allow me to do? What did I gain? So I had to reinvent my personality, right? It forced me to be a listener instead of a talker because I didn't know what the heck was going to come out of my mouth. It forced me to look at, why do I do what I do? What is my purpose? And if things are just to get stuff, so that's my car and that's my house and that's my kids and my stuff, that doesn't make me feel good here. But if my intention is to do what the Bible says and is to help others, is to reach out, to trust him with all of my heart, right? And then he'll direct my path. That means the outcome of it being successful is not my problem. It's the path of what he's saying. And if it works, like, how do you work that out of your head? Like, I did the verses and the verses worked in real life. That's either true or it's not true. If it is true, then the brain injury has to have a positive outcome. I just don't know what it is. And so then God gets me into the jail, right? And they say, oh, it's impossible to fix this. Oh, there's my word. Okay. Oh, it's impossible. Yeah, oh, all right.
That's my cue.
That's my guy, right? Okay. Right. You can't do it. All right, here, hold my Coke. Let's just see what we can do. And then you go in there, and then God does it. And it's like you're using a guy with a brain injury to get this done. You're not using a genius or a scientist or a doctor or some double PhD pastor. You're using me.
Right. And that's that is critical. And what you've experienced has a parallel to our world in the addiction world.
Yeah.
Once something traumatic happens to you and you do some self-resolution, and then you try and find, why did this happen? Why am I doing this? Do some self-inventory.
Mm-hmm.
And then create your motivation. And then find a way out through it. That can happen with anything that we're in. So we're going to catch up at the Forgotten Man Ministries, Venture into the Jail, and then what you're up to now when we come right back. So like, share, follow Spiritual Warfare Unit, and we shall be right back. Hey, it's Aaron with you.
So people that are talking about breaking the rules use their fingers to speak to each other. And that's what gangs do to communicate from point A to point B. It's almost like this has been in the Bible for 2,000 years. And people feel like it's a new thing. That is unbelievable, isn't it? That things that are happening in your life today are in here from 2,000 years ago. That's very weird.
You love me too much and let me stay this way.
All right, welcome back to the Spiritual Warfare Unit podcast. Guest host Aaron from UCAN today we flip the tables and have Isaac on the other side of the table.
Yeah.
And we're kind of getting your information out that your people are wanting to kind of hear about your story, what's going on with you. So we've had a great time so far. We're going to catch up real quick on, okay, here we are. What's the next challenge in life? So you venture into Forgotten Man Ministries and kind of begin a segue there, a stint there, kind of just seeing where life goes.
Yeah, so get in, and I'm doing like an hour a week when I started volunteering, and I would be sick for 2 days. And it was my dad who got me into it, right, which was cool because my dad does jail ministry. And then in 2017, I've been doing it for about 3 years. I start losing about a pound a day.
Most people would love that.
Yeah, right. And at 2:30, the first peel of 30 was solid. You're like, all right, I'm going to eat ice cream.
That.
And, like, you know. And then it was 35 pounds, and it was 40, and it was 50, and it was 60, and it was 70.
So now there's alarms going off, like, okay, natural.
I dropped 76 pounds in 38 days, right?
Yeah. Okay.
So I'm like, oh, this is it. So go to my eye doctor, sleeping 22 hours a day. Go see the eye doctor. She tells me to go to this endocrinologist who just happens to be the Red Wings and Tigers endocrinologist, right? Tippity top of this field.
Nice.
So I go there. They give me this test. He said, if you have what I think you have, he said, you'll go into diabetic shock. So they inject you with something. I can't remember what it was. And I went directly into shock. And so they recovered and revived me. And what happened was is my body stopped producing human growth hormone from the pineal gland, which runs everything. It runs everything. And if that goes, and so I was going into organ failure. And I was like, what do you do? You know, and they're like, well, there's not really anything you can do. You need human growth hormone injections. I'm like, oh, well, how much are those? And they're like $2,000 a month. Well, it might as well be $200,000 a month. Like, it's not going to happen.
At that point, right? Yeah.
And it was like, okay. And so I had to have the talk with my wife, honey, I'm going to die. It's okay. It was horrible.
I can imagine.
And so my whole job at that time was to get out of bed, walk 8 steps to the door, 3 steps to the steps, 14 steps downstairs, watch TV for an hour, and then take those steps and go back to bed. That's all I would do. I was exhausted. Right. And I knew death was coming. Right. And couldn't get the insurance to pay for it. And Pfizer calls and says, we're going to have a doctor at your house in 24 hours and we'll sue your insurance company if they don't pay for it. Now, I don't know how that happened. Right. No clue. So I start taking it. Now, while this is going on, My dad decides to tell everybody that I'm faking my brain injury because I wanted attention. And a lot of times people will get mad, like, I can't believe your dad did that. But let's look at that for a second. He's stressing out and doesn't know how to deal with my injury.
Right.
And then I'm dying. And he doesn't know how to deal with that. So he doesn't want to deal with it. So his reaction was denial, which is a pretty normal human response. And so when I've told the story, people have got frustrated with him. But really, his response makes sense because he didn't want to deal with the fact that I was hurting. But it did create stress, right? So I'm on the verge of starting to come back from organ failure, and I'm dealing with that down at work. And almost committed suicide over that one too. But then I got to this point where it's like, just because someone says something about you doesn't make it accurate. So why am I upset? I didn't have a good answer, and I was like, doggone, I don't have to be upset, you know? And then in Philippians, it says, you know, be anxious for nothing means not to worry, but everything with prayer and supplication, which is an old English word, a humble request. Prayer is talking to God. So if I don't want to be anxious, I talk to God, prayer, humbly request what I want, and then the peace that passes all understanding, right? But it says everything in there. That means things that are negative, right? So I literally had to thank God for things that appeared negative because he knew why. Like, why is my dad saying this? It's crazy, right? But at that moment, when I thank God for it, that's automatically forgiving my dad for the scenario. And then I provided peace, and I'm like, he's going to give me an answer to this, right? So while all this is going on, I get hired at Forgotten Man Ministries, right, on a fluke. Just happened the way it worked out. And they were like, this place is too political, you know, hasn't ran right. Everybody and their brother told me that, right? And within 3 years, like, it turned into a training center. Right. And then January 6th of this year, we had a new boss. He'd been there for a couple of years. And, you know, we had a conversation. He said, I want to put you on sabbatical for 6 months. And I said, all right. So
you weren't even a pastor at the time.
Well, I'm chaplain, you know. So, and so I go on sabbatical January 6th of this year. And I talked to you about it, and God sent me a team. He brought me, you know, my great and powerful Oz, Dave, was like, oh, I want to help you with your videos. And then my buddy Adam was like, oh, I want to help you with your website. And my wife said she'd get a board. And my other buddy was like, oh, hey, I can help you with a podcast. And within 30 days, we were doing the podcast. Within 60 days of that, it was turned into a television show, right? And we started using our programs inside jails and drug rehabilitation programs, and churches have taken it. Next month, our church is going to be using Spiritual Warfare Unit as their community outreach program, which UCAN's the heart and blood of the, you know, everything that we're running in there. So from January 6th to now, we got a television show, which is this podcast, and then all the nonprofits that we partner with are on our website, in which we got 16, right? So if you're looking for anything, right, you start with the UCAN, United Community Addiction Network, with therapy, drug rehabilitation, especially therapy. I want to say that twice because it's a big deal, because you can just do it on your phone, right?
You're right.
So,
right.
And then the housing, and then there's food, and there's parenting classes. I even got a school, people to help with medical stuff. So then going to the churches, because, see, you can get them through the program, right? You get them through the program. They do the housing. They do the rehabilitation, do the thing. But to extend that sobriety, having a community that supports them with clothes and housing and church and relationship has to be there for that to continue that, or else they're going to go back in that group. That's why what we're doing here is so important, because we're creating that back end once they go through the programs with UCAN and say, okay, we're handing you off, and here's a church that isn't going to judge you because you're not perfect, and here's a place that helps people that got young kids, and here's a place where I can help you get some training, and this is Pastor so-and-so, and he's going to help you out, and this is his buddy Bob, and you're going to fit right in. And we create that form, and it extends everything that the United Community Addiction Network works with the sex trafficking and the veterans program and the dog program. And what we do is create the environment that needs to be there for the people that are struggling, whether it's coming out of jail for jail reentry or drug rehabilitation. So when they get the roots of and learn what they need through those programs, we're sending them into a community that accepts them for their mistakes and loves them and helps them to succeed, and getting them out of that environment and extends that spiritual change from point A, a problem, to solution, right?
Right on. And that's part of one of our UCAN's biggest premise, is being able to have the community for that longitudinal care.
Yeah.
And UCAN has to be focused, right? We have a lot of things going on fighting substance use disorder, but there's a lot of secondary services people need, like you mentioned, housing and soft skills like budgeting and resume building and job skills, those type of things. And that's where it was a perfect alliance for us, is you can help us with our spiritual side of things, with our spiritual warfare unit inside of the jails and other places. Mm-hmm. But also, once somebody does get through our program, we have that connectivity with you during the program to say, okay, Isaac can help us with any secondary resources you may need as well. Yep. So it's more comprehensive care we can provide. So we appreciate the nonprofit building that you're doing, because obviously when we're one in the same, it's almost like we have that resource available to us, and that obviously magnifies what we can offer people by far. So that's an instant collaboration that made good sense.
Yeah, and I love doing it. It fills that hole I have here, you know. and just in 6 months, I mean, we get 40,000 views on television show. a week, and we're giving stuff out to people that, you know, I always tell people, help us, help you, help people, right? Because everybody, what do you always say? Win, 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 right? So if the people watching can get a win, because if they can need help, they can get it. If they don't need help, but they know someone that does, they are now the person that can get them that help, and it's no cost to them. And it provides, like, the super great thing. So in an essence, when you look at this, like, the arc of my story, right, if you look at the brain injury and you look what we're doing now and the stuff, like, we're just inventing jail reentry ministry and the secondary support program network for drug rehabilitation. If I wouldn't have been in the car accident and had a brain injury, none of this stuff would be happening. So when you look at it from that perspective, was the brain injury the best thing that happened to me or the worst thing? I think it kind of goes on, well, on your perspective, right?
I think your premise, and we can see this through your story, where God is around and leading and guiding and overseeing and protecting you and your family during this. I think when you're a guy like you that believes and commits and follows and says, what am I to learn through this?
Yeah.
This will open doors and open a Pandora's box in which you never even thought possible, right?
So yeah.
That would be the premise of what you've experienced since January, because, you know, we have some similarities in stories as far as taking that leap of faith or making that change in life.
Yeah.
Based on, man, everything was kind of good. I really don't know that I was looking for this, but you know what? You adapt, you move, you deal with circumstances. A lot of times our worlds are fluid. We come and we go and have to have that ebb and flow to be able to be stern and direct, but yet not concrete enough that we're not listening to or following God's advice through this. So that's one thing in hearing your story today that resonates is there was always that faith and that communication with God. And I'm sure when some people may question their faith when they struggle through things, it's really a time to not only embrace your faith, but build your faith and have courage to make change.
Yeah, it's honestly, it's this decision that it all works or fails on. Like, it was a total choice. Either I believe God and this injury, which is horrible, has merit, or that's crap. One of these things is, and, you know, being hyper-logical, I had to find the answer because I wanted to move on. If it wasn't true, I want to go, yeah, I tried that. That was, and believe me, being a person who understands what it's like to die, like, this all ends. This ends, right? So what did I do? What did I do? And if it's just about collecting things and who's got the most toys and who's got the biggest house, you lose all of it. So what difference does it make? Like, I don't understand why I should spend my time doing those things when I could much better spend my time helping people that I care about and helping someone I have never met, so that gets pushed forward and then I get to see them later after this is over. Like, that makes all the sense in my mind. That I can take with me, and God has given us that opportunity. And if I'm not going to do that, then what am I doing? Just doing things so people get jealous that I have things? That's the function? That doesn't even make any sense. Yeah. And so surrounding myself with people that I consider to be more intelligent than I am, helping me achieve goals, giving credit where credit's due, so those people get the accolades of their work, and watching God move that process forward, how the outcome of what this is less important than trusting that God has that path done and just taking that step. I mean, honestly, the step's hard enough, right?
Right.
And so when you're doing it, and I just wanted to prove it to people, I wasn't like having my relationship, God, well, I know this pastor, and so, you know, I listen to that pastor. Like, I want to know, you know, that relationship between me and God, that's between me and him only. And I'm not following a guy. I'm following what the Bible said. And I want to try it. So when someone says, hey, does that work? I can go, yeah, for sure.
Gotcha. Well, Isaac, great story. Great life. We appreciate what you're doing. Perseverance, right? And making a difference, not only to you and your family, but also the impact in the community. The life applications, biblical study, spiritual warfare unit, you know, it's a lot of work that you have in that to bring that to light. So I highly suggest you out there kind of take a look at the spiritual warfare unit, look at some of those podcasts, like, share, follow, that type of stuff for Isaac. We appreciate the impact you're having on the community. We appreciate your partnership and synergy with UCAN, and we look forward to the future.
Appreciate you, brother.
Take care.
If you have a nonprofit in your area that's doing a lot of work that people should know about, feel free to contact Spiritual Warfare Unit at 810-715-9319, and we would love to have them on to see what good they're doing in the community and find out their story. Thank you so much.